I think we're super quiet.
You're not plugged in.
Something just
two,
like
two crucial steps, plugging it in and turning the mics on. All right, and we're live.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
Welcome back to the Trade Raiders podcast. That's us, right? Yeah, fair one.
Okay. You said the right podcast.
Yeah, because like I have like certain podcasts, they have the same intro, and I'm so afraid I'm going to say that thing, because I said the Weekly Planet that one episode.
Yeah, I listen to podcasts up here, and I'm like, don't get influenced by this in any way.
I know, yeah. the Comic Book Club, where we review different trade paperback every week. I'm Daniel. He's Nathan. We're brothers. We read comics.
All the time. We never stop.
A little more often because of the podcast.
And you can't stop us.
No.
Let's jump into some news that we just looked up because we forgot. First off, the things that we said were going to happen in the last episode that we were predicting didn't happen at all. So whatever those were.
I said like an Image book was going to get a TV deal. And then you...
I said, like, Geoff Johns would go to Marvel and write something.
Yeah.
Which hasn't happened. So...
That would be cool, though. He's not really writing anything, except for, like,
he's writing three Jokers. Three Jokers. He wrote...
Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock, and he was a part of the Green Lantern 80th anniversary that came out a couple weeks ago.
Oh, so he wrote, like a one of the little ones that go in there?
It was, like, 5 to 10 pages.
Yeah.
Like yeah, one of those. Source. Okay. So that's pretty good. He's doing stuff, just not as much.
I feel like an art, like a talent like that has got to be like in full force, or at least have like, you know, a couple books like kind of going, or at least one that's like continuous.
Right.
Everything else has been like maxi series or like a mini series. So anyway, he's not doing like any of the movie stuff anymore, I guess. And I think he's, you know, high in the comics like portion, but I just feel like he should write more.
Yeah, I know he was doing like the CW stuff for a long time, but I don't know if he's doing that anymore. I don't know what he's up to.
Perhaps
come on, Geoff Johns,
make more
come comics. On to the show.
Come on the
tell
pod.
Us about what you're doing.
tell to our faces.
Yes. But news this week, Free Comic Book Day, which got canceled because of the pesky global pandemic.
Are you shitting me?
It is turning into Free Comic Book Day Summer, which is to...
No fucking sense. What?
It's probably just Free Comic Book Summer. I think they crossed out the day and then they wrote summer.
So I get free comics for a month?
I think the season of summer? I think all of the things that were going to be compiled onto the one day...
Wasn't it supposed to be in May?
Yeah, normally it is.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
What were we doing in May? We were quarantining.
Still buying comics, probably?
Yeah, I guess we were.
Yeah.
So. That's when it started to come back. But anyway, since all the, like, it all comes from, like, different publishers and stuff, and I'm sure it's really difficult to coordinate, they're releasing them from July 15th to September 9th. So whichever free books are able to get there at whatever day are going to be being there on Wednesdays, I presume, from July 15th to December 9th.
There's not even any delays in shipping.
There was.
Not anymore, it doesn't seem like. It seems like everything's coming out on time now.
I mean, but when stuff is supposed to be there in May, it's printing probably a month before to print enough. And for Free Comic Book Day, it's free, so you got to print more. So
I guess I don't see why they wouldn't just postpone it and pick a new day.
Yeah, like why not just do September 9th?
Yeah, okay, so I guess that could be cool because like
every week you'll get something for free.
Maybe.
I think it's a good idea because then it keeps people coming back.
But then again, if they had like 12 books on Free Comic Book Day, I would get like three, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of them are like pretty garbage to me, at least.
It would just be some random like Oni Press book or something, or just like these little publishers.
Because normally it's Marvel, it's DC, it's Image, and then all the big publishers, all the big like independent publishers, and then some that you've never probably heard of in your life.
Yeah.
Will push stuff out for free to try and get more people into reading books. And so there's just a bunch of like random stuff that's always like there, and you pick up whatever you're interested in because it's free.
Yeah, and you don't know it's trash until you read it. So exactly, we could be totally wrong.
But I mean, it was free anyway, so you're just picking up someone's art that they spent time on, and I think I don't know if they even get paid.
Well, maybe they for do. For artists, you definitely have to pay like per page. Yeah. I don't think any artist like cares that much. So it's like an investment to pay the creators and then put out this book.
I think they still get paid anyway, actually. I think it's more of an investment on Marvel's end.
Yeah.
And like DC's end and stuff. But it's also good because comic shops also run like pretty fat deals. So
actually, when it comes to like the independent stuff, I think it's like...
Here's
a number one or like a spinoff. Mm-hmm. Come read the rest of it kind of thing. Because Jeff Lemire did one and it was like for... It was like for the Black Hammer universe. It was...
Was it like Dr. Star?
No, it was that future one.
I thought that was Dr. Star.
No, that's different.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure then.
Neither do I. It wasn't that wasn't my favorite part of like that universe, but...
But I'm saying like... Well, some of those people might be self-publishing as well. So it's probably like...
Right.
It's probably like the publisher doesn't put any money. It's just they're allowing people to pay for stuff and have whatever label on them, okay, to my understanding. But but it's also good for comic shops too, because people go in, try and get free books, but then they find out the comic shops have 25% off everywhere. So you get fat trades and stuff.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, shops will be doing that from July 15th to September 9th, because that's always when I buy a bunch of trades that take me a year to read. So
Fair enough.
Yep. But yeah, that was the thing.
We had a trailer for
The Boys.
The Boys.
Yes, two. Dude.
Oh my goodness.
I'm so... When is it? September
7th?
7th?
Yeah.
I think so.
It was like early September.
Yeah. So we should definitely read The Boys because I've never read it.
Oh, it's... you know, I stopped after the second trade because it was like this whole Russian trade and okay, it just did not click with me. But the first trade's awesome.
Really? And, we should definitely read it.
And like the parallels between the show and the book are awesome. Sweet. And like how well they pulled it off and just like kept the spirit of that book fucking blew me away.
I'm pumped
because I've read the book. I'm like, this is cool. I like the idea. And then I just didn't think it would work in like actual TV. And then they fucking nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. The show, I binge through it so quick.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that for a TV show in a while. Like, I know like seasons will come out and they'll be good, but I just like watch them whenever I like do laundry or whatever. But for The Boys, I was like, I'm going home. I'm going to watch The Boys.
I like drove up to my buddy's house and then slept on his couch and he went to bed like early. And then I just watched like 6 episodes. It was up to like 3 in the morning. And then I got up in the morning to go snowboarding because I couldn't stop.
Yeah, dude. It's so, so good. So I'm super excited. All the casting and stuff in it is fantastic.
Perfect.
Yeah,
it's like spitting image.
Yeah, who's the main dude?
Butch.
Yeah, what's that actor?
Carl Urban.
He's the man.
He's awesome for sure. Great at it.
Yeah, so super excited for that. So The Boys second season looks great.
Yeah, watch first season if you haven't. Highly recommend. It's not for everybody, but I still recommend it.
I think it's for everybody, every single person.
I think mom it's tried the new Star it. Wars. She's like, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. I think it's more I'm like, for, I know, right?
I think it's more for us who have seen every kind of like superhero TV show, and this one like makes it political.
Shits on all of them.
It makes it like a weird political, but in like a super dark way. I don't know. It's super fun and refreshing for me. It's and I know great. A lot of people that have watched it that, you know, like, you know, the Marvel movies and stuff.
People
and
watch like that at the cubicles, you know, like they watch that shit. I'm like, no way. Yeah. You're so much cooler.
I know. Exactly. You're like, you don't even know how nerdy this is. And you're like, so yeah, this is written by Garth Ennis.
Let me tell you.
Yeah. Another thing.
No, my turn.
No, you just had your turn,
but you interrupted me.
But I was,
Neil Gaiman is updating, the Sandman for like the 21st century because there's going to be like a Netflix series apparently.
Who cares?
That's awesome. Neil Gaiman's awesome.
He is awesome.
I've never read Sandman, but
me neither.
I tried reading it, but it's just it feels kind of old and that's kind of hard to keep your attention, and he's like a book, right? Like a novelist. And so like that just it can be kind of dense in comic books.
Right.
And then he's updating that because this was written in like the 90s, I think. He's updating it for like the for nowadays, you know, for the show, which I think is a good move. Because I don't think it would be perfect, like, if it went, did it, like, panel for panel.
Yeah, a lot of people swear by it. I remember looking at, like, the first issue or, like, maybe skimming through, like, the previews, and I'm like, this just looks like it would be kind of, like, it feels like a lot to read, almost, and, like, and it's in, like, a different format to where it would just kind of be weird to read, but I don't know, maybe it is. It probably is really good. I just haven't ever taken the time.
I'm sure it's as good as everyone says. Yeah. And you just have to, like, muscle through it, and it might be, like, a slow burn kind of thing.
Maybe.
But,
yeah, people definitely swear by it, so.
But updating it, I think, is a good idea.
Cool. Anyway, and we'll read it whenever that comes out.
Yeah, that sounds a good idea. Your other news that was so important?
It's not that important. It's just Marvel will present at 2020 San Diego Comic-Con online.
What's your source?
Google.
Because I just saw, like, a bunch of things that they weren't.
So, let me go back, I guess. I swear it was, like, right here. I don't know. I saw that. I thought they were. Which seems like it would be kind of weird, but maybe not at the same time.
I feel like they should, because DC's having, like, their own one, and I feel like Marvel should just go to the virtual Comic-Con, you know, and do... Because their shit's always, like... They're always presenting stuff. Why would they just not go unless they have their own thing in the works?
Sorry, the title of the article was cut off, and it said, maybe absent.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so they're probably not going to be there.
We're losing cred.
Even Warner Bros., though?
No, they have their own. Remember, DC's having their own?
Oh, Fandome, yeah.
Fandome. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, never mind. Fake news.
Yeah.
We should just, like, make up one piece of news every week.
Did you pause it and then
no?
Oh, okay. I thought you touched your computer. No, and just, like,
yo, what if we did this? Yeah,
I got a good one.
Anyway, that's the news. Most reliable source on the internet, the Trade Waiters podcast.
You heard it here, probably third.
Yeah, or you probably heard it here first because you're not interested in hearing it at all.
And that's great.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we're here for. You know, someone's got to do it.
Yeah. So. We decided last week that we were going to do volume one of Hawkeye.
My Life as a Weapon.
My Life as a Weapon.
You have the physical trade.
Oh, yeah. I will never get rid of this. Like,
it's great.
I will keep it forever.
Yeah, this was super, super just refreshing, like, to read just, like, as, like, a comic. Not even just, like, a superhero book, but I think it's super creative just as, like, a comic book in general. Mm-hmm. Just because it gets, like... From both, like, writing, art, and, like, coloring and lettering, like, all of it, it's all just so, like, unique. And it was just very fun to, like, microanalyze, I guess.
Yeah.
So I was super interested in it. And it's genuinely, like, really funny and interesting. And this is great.
Yeah.
So it's by Matt Fraction.
I told you. Just saying.
David, I mean, I didn't
you knew not you
believe
you. It.
I knew that this was always a thing where I'm like, I should read that whenever... I'm bored.
I loved rereading this.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It's a blast. By Matt Fraction, David Aja, or David Aja, however it is supposed to be. I'm gonna call him David.
David J. That's how I always read it in my head.
That's it. I don't think.
I know it's wrong, but... And then
Matt Hollingsworth.
And then Javier Pulido did, like, the fourth and fifth issue.
Yes.
David doing 1-3.
I didn't realize that was going to happen, so I was a little disappointed when I went to the... fourth issue and saw that.
Even in the second trade, because I have that one too, he does most of them except for one issue, so I'm not sure what the schedule was like, but I think
it was probably, I mean, that's pretty recent, so I know that, like, Marvel is, like, at that time, is that Marvel now, is that what that is?
Yeah,
at that time they're trying to push out just, like, a bunch of books every week, so I think they may have been doing the thing where they had rotating artists.
Yeah, I would hope that with his, like, kind of more, like, simplistic style, it would he'd be able to do more, but I guess not.
No, I mean, I'm not sure, just because one, like, yeah, there's, it's not as, like, detailed, and, like, you kind of know with, like, the colors, like, there's no, like, shading, really. It's just, like, whatever shading there is done by
blacks.
David. It's just blacks. But I still think that the coloring is, like, super hard to pull off like that, but it also gives him, it gives Matt, I guess, more opportunity to get really creative with it. And, like, have crazy color palettes and stuff like that. But
yeah, I think the idea is to make it not look, like, dated.
Exactly.
And like,
because I feel like it really
Batman
could be
Year One or, like, a Daredevil Born Again.
Yeah.
You have to have those, like, complex color palettes, because like right here there's like this red car and then like a brown like kind of ground, and then like the buildings are kind of red as well because it's like what's it called, golden hour.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for like multiple pages in the issue to have like their own color palette, which I think is really cool.
Yeah,
so in general, this is like the story of Hawkeye when he isn't really doing like Avengers level stuff, and he's mainly doing like person level stuff. So he's like, it's like a really grounded and like silly story, but then it ties into some Avenger stuff later on. But it's just Clint as a guy kind of walking around doing his own thing. And it was super fun.
Yeah, it's just kind of the stuff that he runs into, like living his life in, like, I think it's New York.
New York.
And so, so it's kind of cool that it like stands on its own and nothing that really happens like interferes with what the Avengers are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think that's what I like it as much. You don't have to know anything, and
yeah,
it holds its own like that way.
It's very much like kind of like a jumping on book for sure. But like, you also don't really need to know much about Hawkeye either.
Because I don't give this to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there are characters that'll come up and people maybe not know them, like Kate Bishop, like maybe not everybody's familiar with, but you don't really need to be at the same time.
He like brings it up pretty casually.
Yeah, right? And he explains it and kind of catches everybody up, so that's good too. So I'm sure like this will be a book in like 20 years. People will be like, you should read this, you know?
Yeah.
For sure.
I think it's one of those books now.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying it'll stay like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, plus, like, all the covers are great.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah.
I think those are all David covers.
I think my favorite one was the second issue one, just because it was, like, it's very simple. Let me find it. It's just, like...
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I think that's the cover for, like the Ultimate.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's great.
Because that's super familiar.
Yeah, I really like, just throughout the book, what David does with, like, I like discovered that a lot of what he does is just like minuscule details that he throws on the page that you don't necessarily need, but kind of gives you like more context about what's going on, I guess.
Are you talking about like the diagrams?
Yeah, like diagrams and like little pictures and like little circle or square panels that he throws on there, because like in this second issue cover, it's just him aiming a bow and arrow, but behind him there's like arrows and stuff kind of going around, and then little circles that show like what his hands are doing, and then a little diagram that shows him like shooting, like it, and it all looks like very aesthetically,
I feel like,
pleasing.
I could like draw a bow and like shoot it from like just looking at this.
Almost, yeah, basically,
because it tells you what to do with like your fingers and your wrist,
but then all the like purples and stuff that they use are just super interesting to look at. So
yeah,
good job, he's a good artist.
Yeah, this is cool because like Hawkeye, he's dressed like super casually. He's like casual Friday Hawkeye.
Yeah. He's just got a purple shirt.
Yeah. He's got like a black shirt with like his purple like logo or whatever. Uh-huh. Rather than like his like, and like some cargo pants rather than his like, you know, leathery, whatever.
Purple spandex, mask, purple. Horny.
Well, that's like old school Hawkeye. Even like the newer stuff, he's got like some ridiculous kind of outfit that's like purple.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yep.
But yeah.
So we'll go into issue one. So the book kind of opens with him barely surviving a fall from a building. There's no real context behind it, but it's just like, this is kind of the life of Clint Barton. He's broken a bunch of ribs and like his pelvis and stuff. And there's a little sequence where he's pretty banged up and like leaving the hospital after some time and choosing to walk out into New York traffic instead of on a wheelchair like he should be. Like, I think just kind of from the get-go, you really know what this book is going to be about, because the colors are super interesting. Like, whether he's in the hospital, it's all, like, grayed out, or if he's leaving out to go to New York, it's super yellow and orange. But then also the lettering of, like, New York traffic is all, like, big honks and little honks, and they're all, like, overlapping each other.
Little beeps, big little, beeps.
Yeah, little beep, beep, and then a little honk, honk.
I'm like, oh, man, I'm in New York.
Yeah, that it really feels like it. It's just crowded, and, like, it feels like it's just attacking you. So it's really, really clever lettering, too. But he goes back to his apartment building to find that the Russian landlord, Ivan, and his tracksuit mafia are tripling the rent and kicking residents out. And one of the residents are looking to Clint for help, but he can't really do anything. And then at the same time, there's also a different B plot that's going on
It like flips between the pages.
Yep. And it's in the future. We don't really know this at the time, but it's in the near future throughout this issue where Clint has some dog in the vet that looks like pretty beat up, and he clarifies that it's not his dog, and so we don't really know what that's about.
But he still wants them to like take all measures to save it.
Yeah. And the doctor's like, it wouldn't be, you know, the dog's like super banged up, and the doctor's like, it wouldn't be inhumane to use like euthanasia or euthanism, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And both, he's like, right. And Clint's like, he'll make it, like fix the dog. Mm-hmm. And so there's that storyline going on. But I like Ivan, the Russian dude in this, and just how they talk.
They all just say bro like way too much.
And like just the accent of it, like you really like know what he's saying, because Matt Fraction, like he like does a Russian accent through typing. And so he just like, Ivan will say stuff like, back off, I kill you, okay bro, like
spot on.
Yeah, back off bro.
I wish I heard your impression before I read this.
I can narrate it. Back off, I just kill all, you, okay,
all,
bro?
All the Russian shit. You,
bro, back off, bro. This not concern you, or whatever.
Yeah. Just,
so, yeah, I just think that's a fun thing. And just all the other Russian dudes are wearing tracksuits, so you know that they're Russian dudes with Ivan.
Yeah,
I think that's really funny.
They all got the Adidas ones, like the Run DMC kind of shit going on.
Yeah, it's so funny. And so... we jump back to, or sorry, it's later in the day where Clint kind of goes to deal with this, and he walks up to a secret casino that the Russians hang out in, and he has like a duffel bag full of money, and he walks up to two of those Russian guys and a dog that's there, and they let him in because he has like a fuckload of money, or he kind of lets himself in, really, but he finds Ivan and drops the duffel bag like on his table, saying that it should pay for everyone's rent that he just tripled. And Ivan says he doesn't want it because he wants the building to be empty. So clearly there's some like sketchy shit going, to which Clint says he wasn't asking. And then there's like the first like fight scene of the book. And it looks just super creative. Because really all that happens is that he throws a card at somebody and it hits him in the neck.
But it'd be then, like each position of like his hand before he throws it.
Yep. It shows like his hand sort of bent back and then how he throws the card. Or there's like another, like I think a normal artist would just throw, like have him throwing the card and you see like the circle that goes around him and like the card shooting.
Right.
Like you would see with like a Gambit book or something. Uh-huh. And then the next big page is just everything like in the air and like the table's flipping. There's money in the air. And he's like, Clint is like fighting and stuff. But he really like, he really accentuates what's going on, like someone getting punched and their glasses flying off, or like there's a separate mini panel in there with like a bottle and it hits Clint. So I just think it's really like visually pleasing to like look at.
Yeah. And I thought it might have been just for this book, but in like that other book that he did,
The Seeds.
Like uh-huh. He does like that same thing. It feels like just yeah. pointing out these like very subtle things.
It reminds me of Sorrentino, but
oh yeah,
but that's Sorrentino more, like that's circles in the panel. What's, yeah, going on in the panel, and David just kind of takes the important parts and puts them somewhere on the page.
Yeah, he kind of zooms in on like stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, super super fun to look at. He's eventually thrown out the window to the entrance where the two guards are and their dog out front. Clint knows that there's like 30 yards between him and cover, and the guards are about to shoot him. So he runs still, cause that's his best option. He gets shot in the arm, but then that guard's dog attacks them. And Clint says he knows that he should keep running, but he chooses to turn back and help the dog. The dog gets thrown into the road while Clint beats up the two other guards, and he tries to stop a driver from hitting the dog that's in like the traffic. And the dog still gets hit, unfortunately. And so that's where you kind of figure out that dog is the one that is in the beginning of the issue.
Right. As he's walking into the like little casino, he gives the dog like some pizza.
Yeah.
And so I think that's like why the dog is trying to help him.
Yep.
And
then that's right.
He tries to stop the dude that's driving with like some change that's in his pocket, and he flicks it through like the driver's side window.
Yep. The window like shatters and stuff. And I think that ends up saving the dog, or I think that's what's supposed to happen, because the driver swerves a little bit. So maybe he doesn't hit him head on.
Right.
But he still gets hit. But I really one of the panels that just destroys me is just when the dog sees the car, like this one right here.
Oh yeah,
no. He sees the car and he like his head kind of aims down a little bit and he just like looks so hopeless and vulnerable. It destroys me.
It's heavy.
He's like such a great dog.
He's artist. The best dog.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the artist. Oh yeah. Yeah, he's a good dog artist
too. He's a good dog.
And he's a good boy.
David is like a really great dog artist. Top three dog artists, go.
David.
I've seen Doc draw a dog, Doc Shaner.
Oh, okay.
He drew like a crypto, and I think he did like a crypto thing.
Oh, yeah, that's sick. Okay.
And then...
Who does like the Inhumans and has to draw like Lockjaw?
There's a bunch of them. I think... I can't...
Wait, isn't it like something... David Lee?
No.
I think he did that like main one.
What do you mean the main one?
Like the main, like the
older like book,
the definitive run of like Inhumans.
Yeah, it was just Inhumans.
Yeah. Was that David Lee or is that someone else?
I think it's somebody else. Actually, it might be David Lee.
I think it's something Lee because he always someone that like always goes to Phoenix Comic Con. I think he lives here or something.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's an Inhumans artist.
Mm-hmm.
But I always think it's Jim Lee and I get excited, but it's not.
No, hold on. I'm looking. I gotta look it up. It was in like 2000. Oh, it's Jay Lee.
Ah, that's it. Jay Lee. Yeah, yeah.
So I bet he gets that all the time, dude.
Are you Jim Lee? I love your Batman.
Oh, dude, I love Hush. Oh, like, dude, the New 52 Injustice, dude.
That's Wildstorm is sick, bro.
I would hate to be a really good artist with the last name Lee that all his first name also starts with a J.
Also like, to be like Asian and just like,
and he's there's really great, genuinely. Like he's no, done
he's awesome, yeah.
Really, really great stuff. So yeah, poor guy.
Does it say where he lives?
Shout out.
Does he live here?
Let me look it up. I was just looking at the Inhumans trade, but Lee.
Nah, we gotta get creepy.
He's a Korean American comics artist. I don't think it'll say where he lives.
Ooh.
Jay Lee address. Just kidding. Maybe on Wikipedia?
Jay Lee, come on the pod.
Yeah, Jay Lee, we'll get you on. It's not gonna tell me where he lives. Anyway. Ah. Anyway, the dog gets hit.
Yeah. And then the Russians, they go into the vet where
Clint is.
Clinton's just kind of sleeping.
And they fight for a bit, but they stop, or Clint stops because he's still like in a vet where there's other people there. There's a really funny like remark that someone there makes where Clint says like, "It's okay, everybody. I'm an Avenger." And someone else is like, "Are you like Iron Fist or something?"
Yeah.
And I want to know, I meant to look it up, but is this before or after he did Iron Fist?
Who?
Matt Fraction?
Probably after.
You think so?
Because I...
What year was this?
I think 16.
So this book, The Mortal Iron Fist... eBay's not going to tell me, huh?
Probably not.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, I just think it's cool. Iron Fist got a little shout out. It's also funny because in this context, Iron Fist is supposed to be like an insult to be called, you know?
I think in any context.
No, Iron Fist is a cool character. You're wrong. Okay. We'll have to read Immortal Iron Fist. It's genuinely good. It's David as well.
Really?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, it's great.
Same creative team?
With Brubaker.
Oh,
you can't knock that, dude.
No, yeah, that's juicy. That's
it's so juicy. It's like I literally read it and I was like, this is everything I want in an Iron Fist book.
That's such a big creator sandwich right there.
A Brubaker Neha Fraction sandwich.
Delicious.
Yeah,
I'd be down to do that just for like the next like Marvel book.
Okay, let's
just because I'm so up. I love
so yeah
this.
Now that's a Fraction Neha book that I've read but you haven't had.
Ah,
there we go.
The tables have turned.
So yeah, but Clint's talking to Ivan as he's like getting into a cab, asking what kind of Avenger does this, because technically Ivan didn't do anything wrong. Like he owns the land, he's able to do whatever he wants with it. But Clint talks about, you know, being inspired by like Captain America and says that whatever, and he says he wants to buy the building outright, to which Ivan said that he had a buyer already, but Clint doesn't care.
Which is why I was trying to get everyone out.
Yeah. So we don't know why he has this building. We didn't read the second trade, and we don't find out what Ivan's doing, but do you find out what he wants to do in the second trade?
Yeah. So the Russians thing, like, is throughout the series, I think.
Okay.
Because I finished the series, like, a year or two ago. And
throughout the series, meaning Fractions part, or does that carry on into
just Fractions Lemire's part? I didn't, okay. I didn't touch on Lemire's.
Ooh, maybe we should do a Lemire one too.
See a Lemire book,
yeah,
or the Lemire Hawkeye.
Lemire Hawkeye. We should do a different Lemire book first, I think.
Yeah, since we haven't done any.
Yeah,
and there's
which
like,
is ridiculous because he's like our favorite.
We could do that. We'd both be hyped to do.
We'll definitely do that.
We gotta do Black Hammer.
We got it right.
Got it.
Hardcover.
Oh, library edition.
Oh dude, the thing's so fat. It's so good.
I would buy that.
There's so much this. Good back matter. Yeah,
we'll, dude, back matter matters would be thick.
Back matter matters is gonna be, it's got to be like half the episode. I remember I was just
separate
like,
episode for back matter.
I was eating it up, dude. Anyway, so he goes back into the vet to find that the dog made it. He's got broken legs, ribs, and pelvis, which I don't know if you caught that, but Clint broke his pelvis and his legs and his ribs in the beginning.
Ah.
Which is kind of, it's kind of a nice thing. They have, they bond over being hurt. except the dog lost an eye. But the vet says that he'll make a recovery with care. And there's a funny scene where Clint like figures out what the dog's name is, which is Arrow. Like he didn't name him Arrow. His name was already Arrow. And he says that he'll come up with something better.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cute.
I was like, yeah. Just like, I'm like, Arrow. Just, it was kind of like on the nose, I guess.
Well, he knows that and he says, I'll come up with something better.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, I'm sure that's what he was going to call him originally. Like, uh-huh. That's probably what Clint was going to have named him. But he, I think Fraction's smart enough to know that's a little bit on the nose. So he came up with something different, which is ultimately better.
Right.
So that's issue one. Issue two. Every issue, the first page is like, a splash page or like a really big page that starts with this looks bad.
He's like, okay,
because it's bad. It's Clint Barton in just some weird situation.
First one, he's like falling out of like a window, and then this one, he's like diving in a pool with a bunch of bullets flying through the water.
Yeah, bullets are flying through. There's a bunch of like things that I now am noticing that give context to the book. Like there's a little spiral panel. There's like.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple different things going on here that you'll figure out what they are later. So it's not just the situation. It's also different abstract things about the issue, which I think is cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that's super refreshing. Like, that's something that is unique to this book just as a comic book. Like, no other... I've never seen a different, like, image book or anything like that do something along those lines.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think it's just things that... that do make sense in context, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily notice them until they like come back around at the end.
Yeah.
And then you don't notice until you reread it.
And it's pretty common to be told like out of order and like time, you know, like to have like a situation where you're like, oh, I wonder how they get here. And then they do get there, but this way just does it. It like twists it a little bit, which I think is cool.
Yeah. And that like whole like, non-linear time or storytelling,
mm-hmm.
he like does like, up the ass the rest of the series like is yeah. It's pretty contained this first trade,
yeah,
but he gets like intense about it like the rest of the way. It's cool. A lot of fun.
So anyway, going into the past, I guess Kate Bishop's in the picture. She was taking over as Hawkeye while Clint was running around as Ronin. They're catching up and she asks like what these symbols are that are coming up around the city. And Clint says that it's what's called the Vagabond Code, which is a code in the circus that would let people like coming after them know what's up, I guess, is how they explained it. So people know that like the circus people are there, and I guess, I don't know, they fight good. I wasn't too sure like what that meant when he said to let them know what's up, but
just be like that, I don't know, they're watching or not to mess with
I guess
it's
like
thing.
A calling card in a way almost. Maybe. But they okay. haven't done anything yet. I don't know.
Right.
But Clint mentions that they've been popping up over New York through like the last week. So
what's fun about these couple pages is that his entire apartment is like got like this magenta kind of like color tone to
very
it.
Very purpley, yeah.
Very purpley. And then she's got like a mug that's got a big H on it.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
It's so dumb.
What's unique to this issue is that every time there's like a new character that comes up, in the middle of them talking, there's going to be like a panel that like is almost like it's freezing in time, and it's Clint Barton like explaining who that character is. But in that panel, it's like all black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So in this one, like Kate's talking, she said, "I can keep going, boss." And then it freezes, and you know, Clint explains like Kate took over for me as Hawkeye once upon a time, like stuff like that.
Yeah,
like which how makes it visually interesting to look at.
It's that's just, like how it work in like a show or something.
Yeah, and like a TV show that like breaks the fourth wall a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Like when someone like pauses the movie and then walks out in front of the screen.
Yeah,
that's what it reminds me of. So there's also a really cool sequence where
he's shooting an arrow.
Yeah, he like Clint is practicing shooting an arrow at a target, shooting like multiple arrows, and like. It does a really cool sequence where it, I don't even know how to explain it.
As he's like pulling back the arrow and like going through his thought process and like letting it go, it's like, it's cutting up like everything that Kate's doing. And what she's, all she's saying is like,
Well, that's cool.
But like, in every like millisecond, it's like breaking up each panel to where there's like a letter underneath each panel and showing like what her face is doing as she's saying that word.
Yeah.
So like when she's saying cool, like she makes like a little O sound.
Yeah.
And
it's supposed to show like how fast Clint is thinking, I presume, and like how much focus he's putting into shooting like multiple arrows at once.
And it's like everything he's doing in the time that she's saying that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty neat.
Yeah. Super unique.
Yeah, the panel structure in this book is insane.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all super fresh and like nothing you've ever really seen.
Mm-hmm. So Clint and Kate dress fancy and go to a rich hotel that is supposed to be only for rich people, like New York Mafia rich people. Like you see the owl in there, Tombstone, Hammerhead, the Kingpin.
So villains too.
Villains, yeah.
Did you see this? So they saw that... hotel thing in the paper which Kate was reading.
And that's where it introduces them.
Huh?
It introduces Matt Fraction and David in this little newspaper.
Oh yeah, you saw that?
Yeah,
that's
I did.
That's what I was gonna bring up.
Yep. Yeah, part of the page is like, it looks like a newspaper thing explaining
what the hotel thing is, but then like an unrelated like article is like said like, oh, written by Matt Fraction and David Aja.
I like in the headline it says world's first 6-star hotel. Which is funny.
Exactly.
But anyway, they're dressing up fancy to try and like fit into the situation, but they are investigating like the circus thing. They go to the theater room where everybody's sort of going into, and the villain Ringmaster is there putting on a show for everybody, and all the rich people are in this one room, and part of the circus is like a guy throwing knives blindfolded, but Clint is able to tell that they were both trained by the swordsman just based off of like his movements and mannerisms and stuff. And then during the performance, Ringmaster does like a hypnotism trick that freezes all the rich people, allowing the circus to rob them all in one like swoop. But Clint and Kate had their sunglasses on through the whole thing, so they're unaffected. What I really like about this is, like the panel that's introducing like the circus and stuff, Clint talks about his time in like the circus, which I think is cool for him to like reflect on.
Yeah, I didn't really know that.
But for whatever reason, like this really got me was like this rounded panel showing like the entirety of the circus.
Mm-hmm.
Like only the top part is rounded. It almost makes it look like a curtain or something.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
It's interesting because it's very subtle, but still tells that story, I think. Mm-hmm. So I like that shit.
That's some good shit.
That's some good shit. And so, yep, so everybody's being robbed. Clint and Kate decide to split up. Kate fights a girl that's part of the circus and ends up disguising as her. And Clint gets overpowered by a bunch of men and is captured and taken to that mustache man that was throwing knives earlier. His name is Jacques. Is that how you say that?
Huh?
The dude with the mustache.
Jacques, probably, yeah.
Jacques, yeah. And that's the guy who was trained by Swordmaster, like Clint. And so Jacques tells the men to take Clint on a boat and far away to kill him so that there's no, like, Avengers hunting the circus. He says that he doesn't need that, but Kate is there to sort of intercept them, taking him away while she's in her new disguise. And so this is when she kind of breaks him out of that. And you see, like, you really see how well they work together in this, because he's all tied up. But while Kate Bishop is, like, intervening, Hawkeye breaks out and then jumps up in the air. And then Kate shoots an arrow to, like, untie him, like, break the ties between his arms and stuff. It's a really great scene. And they eventually end up jumping through some glass into a pool below, which is what we saw on the first page. Mm-hmm. And Kate takes out the last of the goons with like a multi-arrow shot, and Clint takes out Jacques with a bank shot to the neck. So there's a bunch of things that happen there, but what I do like is that part of Kate's disguise has like a bunch of arrows in it, which she uses like as her quiver.
Oh, wait, the ones that were in her hair?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know if you noticed this either, but like as the fight scene goes, there's less and less arrows that are in her wig.
Ah, that's really close attention to detail.
Yeah.
By you and David.
Yep. But what really, like, it's so good, but what really kind of pissed me off is when they're jumping out of the, when they're jumping out of, like, the skybox or whatever to jump into the pool, she has, like, a couple arrows left, like, there's less, but you see how many she fires, like, multiple at a time, and it doesn't, like, add up to like how many there were in like this last page when there's like a certain amount of arrows in her head. Like she shoots 4 or 5 arrows here and then Clint takes the last one and shoots the Ringmaster. I feel like he could have just drawn 6 arrows.
So you know? She shoots like 5.
To take out the goons.
And then there's one like in her wig still.
And then
Clint uses that one. But then again, they just went through some water, and so it's possible that it could have just fell out of there. Oh, yeah. So
see what I mean?
The last one that he uses is the one that's in the wig.
Right, and that one's fine.
I'm going to say that the arrows just fell out when they jumped in the pool.
I didn't think of that, so that's a good...
Oh, I'm going back to the first page. Hold on. Let's see if there's any just floating around.
Oh, my God. If there's one floating around, I'm going to shit my pants.
I'm going to punch in the face.
Please be an arrow.
Yeah, dude, there's arrows floating
around. Shut up.
Look, right there. There's one right there, and there's one up here.
Oh, my God, dude. How many?
2.
Dude, I think I counted that it was like 2 off. 1, 2, 3. I mean, I think it's more than that, to be honest.
Yeah, so... Yeah, anyway.
There's like 9. But that's... I mean, that's enough for me. Like, she loses
some. Wait, no, there's one like coming loose, too, so...
That's enough for me. I mean, that just kind of speaks to like you can kind of go back and forth. If and get I was the extra like David, context. Be like,
ah, shit, I gotta come back.
This one's falling off. So yeah, super cool.
He just made good you job. Look stupid.
I know he did.
And he did this like 5 years ago.
He really did. But the multi arrow shot that she does to take out like the rest of the goons, that's also a callback to like the first few pages of the issue where Kate talks about like the Roman Emperor Domitian. Saying that he could fire 4 arrows at once between his fingers.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught that either.
Yeah, because like when he was talking and during that panel we explained, he's like shooting multiple arrows at a time.
Yeah, and Kate's is like, well, this guy could do 4, basically.
Yeah. And so later they like stumble out and they go to the boat where they were putting all the stuff that they stole. And they just drive the boat away. And
yeah.
So now the villains are like pinning it on Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Kingpin sees them as they leave, as they were robbing the robbers who robbed the robbers, as they put it. But Kingpin sees them as they leave, and now they have like a huge target on their head. And then this last scene is like this whole issue is super creative, but this page is like my favorite shit of the whole issue.
Really? Why?
Just because like...
Because it's like 20 panels?
It's just like a dialogue like page. And it is like 20 panels, probably even more. But like the two characters are split up over a phone call. And like, so Clint is in like the top left corner and Kate's in like the bottom right corner. And their whole conversation is splits them apart. I just think it's like super creative. Mm-hmm. And it feels like a phone conversation.
Yeah, it's very natural.
They're going like very sounding. Back and forth. And Clint's like, I don't know what I just said. Basically, like it sounds super natural and it's awesome.
So he's basically just asking her to like, work with him, like
yeah, become be partner, Hawkeye, I guess.
Be partners or whatever.
And then the last page is him creating like a to-do list, kind of like on. He's like pinning like sticky notes to a map and stuff, and he's like creating like a to-do list
of basically. More like newspaper clippings and stuff.
Uh huh. This is kind of where I piece together like why I like David's like art so much, Because this would normally
this
be...
This is when you decided.
This is, well, yeah. This is why this is what clicked for me, like, what I think is so visually interesting about it. Because I think any other artist would just have Clint looking at a map with sticky notes. But David, like, highlights just certain, like, pages and stuff that are there. And, like, Lucky laying on the ground and stuff all over the floor. Like, he just basically takes a splash page and takes, like, minuscule details and throws them around the page. And they're super interesting to look at.
Yeah, and then you... Because, like, one of the clippings is, like, kidnappings and murderers. And so it just gets you an
idea. Yeah, one of them says violence.
What the to-do list is and, like, what he's, like, trying to do.
Yeah, and one of them is just Lucky on the ground. He's like, roof.
This is a cool cover, too, for number 3.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, purple, like, dark purple for Hawkeye. And it's, like, his hand and, like, the hand portion of the bow. And then, like, inside of that is, like, a... upper body shot of him, like a silhouette
firing the arrow.
Yeah,
very abstract.
And then it's also Kate in like this like magenta kind of color doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sick.
Yeah, there's a lot of white space, which is pretty ballsy for a cover.
It works super well though.
It does, helps it stand out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so that's where the title thing goes.
Well, yeah, wait, what do you mean? Oh, well, I know, but even still, like, with covers now, there's probably like orange or something in the background to like make it pop, or it's supposed to make it pop more.
Okay. Yeah.
But when every like cover is like that, it just kind of blends in.
I think if you can pull it off and you can have those simplistic kind of like covers, like the,
but they have to be super creative. Like
the chip stuff.
Yeah. All the chip stuff is like that.
They draw my eye way more than like the super detailed, like ones that just look like crazy panels, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, because cool. That's, I guess I like the art style way more.
I think I do too. There's more like bigger things for your eyes to focus on, because with like the first chip cover for Life Story, it's just Spider-Man trying to web a helicopter that looks like it's from the 1970s or whatever.
Right.
I think it's cool. Or the 60s. Anyway, issue 3, there's another This Looks Bad page. They're in like a Challenger with like Mini Coopers that are behind them shooting at him. And there's two themes to this whole like issue. There's 9 mistakes that Clinton made on this day, and then all the kinds of arrows that he uses.
Oh, dude, this is my favorite issue.
It's such a fun issue. So dumb idea number 9 is that he decides he wants to try and label all the arrows and keep them organized. He like is telling the story and telling us what his dumb ideas were, which I think is fun because you're like, oh, is that, you know?
Yeah.
And we're kind of following along with him. But, you know, they don't have any tape for him to organize them. So mistake number 8 is that he decides to go outside and find some tape in town.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the issue, we see that why that messes everything up, because each of his like, what do you call them? Specialty arrows have their own
trick arrows.
Yeah. They have their own like panel just introducing them. Like this one, there's like a net arrow and stuff. And
it looks like it's got like a capsule that would hold like a net. Or
there's like acid arrows and like putty arrows and stuff like that.
We'll get to those. Don't spoil it.
Sorry. But one of the arrows in the next page is showing them trying to escape the Mini Cooper like cars that are shooting at him, and he shoots the wrong arrow because he doesn't have them organized.
Yeah, he's so like, he
shoots
just,
like a Ebola arrow.
He's just sitting in the car window like it's open,
and Kate is like
handing him as she's driving.
Yeah,
and so she has no idea what she's giving him. And
yeah,
so is that what that's called, a Ebola, like with the two balls and the string connecting?
Ebola, yeah.
And it wraps around
it. I mean, it says it.
Yeah, okay.
Which, you know, this one wasn't particularly useful in this situation just because it just wraps around the gun and doesn't do anything.
Yeah, and they're like, the Russians are like laughing at him.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's a bunch of nearby stores that Clint goes to find tape, but they're all closed for the day, and they tell him to wait until tomorrow, but Clint hates waiting, and so he goes to keep looking, which is mistake number 7. When he goes out to look for more, he finds that crimson like 1970s Challenger on the road and compliments the redhead girl that's driving it. There's like a bit of banter, but she says that she'll sell it to him with enough cash, and Clint flexes a little and says that he's rich and says that he'll get the cash, which is mistake number 8 or 6.
Yep.
And then also asks her to drive him to a tape place. So at first I thought this was Black Widow. I think probably everybody thought that, maybe.
I think that's safe to assume, but I guess...
But it's clearly not. Like, I'm sure that that right. would get brought up.
I don't even know if we even know her name. I can't remember.
I just called her Redhead the okay. whole time. But we cut back to... we cut to a little bit later, and... hold on. So, yeah, we cut to a little bit later, and Clint and Kate are driving the Challenger.
It just keeps jumping back and forward from yeah. this like car chase and like what Clint's doing.
But this time we find out that the redhead is in the back, all tied up with like tape around her mouth for some reason. And Clint's arrows are all jumbled up and hasn't organized them yet. So Kate's handing him a bunch of stuff that doesn't work until eventually he gets one that does work. He gets like an acid arrow that melts like the engine of the car. And then he also, I like that the arrows like have their own establishing shot, but everyone like looks designed in such a way that it would be an arrow
that, for that use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was super hard to like come up with just these simple designs.
Like, what
that,
the fuck would an acid arrow look like?
Or like, what does a putty arrow look like? And they have to be like, I assume they have to look aerodynamic too. So he makes that work too.
To where they fly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we cut back to, mistake number five. Clint is at the redhead's house and they just fucked, presumably, because Clint's naked.
Potentially smashed. Yeah, because yeah. he's looking out the window.
Definitely smash. He sees the four Coopers, their exact same car, kind of outside. They're numbered 1 through 4.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like a stupid little detail that doesn't even matter. But
yeah, I think it's funny. He asks the redhead chick why she's trying to like sell this car and then catch a flight out of town. But she says... Ask me no questions and I'll tell you no lies, which I think is cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good line. then the tracksuit Russians kick down the door, like guns blazing. Clint's like still naked. And so he jumps behind the couch. I've seen this panel before where he's like jumping, but the thing that's censoring his dick is just like a super retro Hawkeye face.
Yeah, with like the old mask that has the H on the forehead.
So funny,
and
dude.
Like the, I don't know, the pointy like eye holes or whatever.
So funny.
Oh, it's excellent. I think this is posted on like Twitter or something.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it before and I'm like, that's good. And I've always known it's from this run, but I like the lettering in this one too, because when they're shooting their guns, there's just a bunch of braca, 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 like going across like the top of all these different panels.
Yeah, the letter does a really good job because it almost looks like, you know, braca, braca, David braca. Drew it, like just in there.
Yeah, it does.
Because it doesn't look like it was...
yeah,
like copy and paste. It looks like it's a part of the art and it works really well.
Yeah. So Clint's kind of just grabbing anything that he can to use as a weapon. He grabs like this lamp and is using that to knock people out. Eventually he gets knocked out, and when he comes to, he calls Kate to pick him up and go after the men. And he knows where they are because the tracker arrow that he left in the Challenger.
Yeah.
And so then cut to just a little bit later. Kate picks him up in her purple bug that she has. Of course, it's purple.
It's got to be.
Yeah. And he's like still putting on his clothes. And I guess that's like mistake number four, is that he's still putting on his shirt. I didn't really understand that one.
When he was like recruiting her or whatever, he was like saying like, oh, you know, because I don't want to have sex with you or whatever. And that's why we'd be a good team or whatever. And it was kind of hinted to, that's what he meant. And so I guess the bad idea number four was not getting dressed first, and just like she's seeing like his like
abs and stuff.
Yeah, his like athletic body. So,
but nothing ever really like comes from that, does it?
And no, I can't,
because I guess he's like much older than her, so it would be weird if that happened.
Yeah, because she brought that up too.
Yeah, she did.
I don't think so, because I think I would have been upset if it did.
I think I would be upset too. I like this dynamic.
Yeah, I know, this is awesome.
So
it's like a buddy cop kind of like movie, but like
one's super old and one's super young, and like
yeah,
a really good at what he does. So
they're both like on the same level as far as skill, which yeah. I think is cool. It's like, it's not. Even though Clint has been around longer,
one of them's not showing off, you know.
Yeah, one's not like outshining the other, yeah. Which is cool.
So they end up T-boning the Challenger and taking the men out. He gets like a putty arrow and sticks one of the Russian dudes to the ground, which is mistake number three, because now there's a bunch of other cars that are on them. another instance of a wrong arrow happens where, or no, he starts getting a bunch of good arrows. So he gets like an explosive one that takes out a car. He gets like a cable one that he sticks to a semi and it like splits the one of the Mini Coopers, like the top of it off, which is cool. He gets like a smoke bomb arrow. So a bunch of good stuff. One car is left and they're on like this crowded bridge. Eventually they become like side by side and Clint uses like a suction tip arrow to stay on top of the roof of the car and he uses that to like swing himself over to the last car and he takes that guy out by like electrocuting him, but it ends up crashing the two cars. And his second big mistake is that just doing that in general, because he fell off and gets knocked out. And then he gets up and then there's the one Russian dude left with a gun and Kate with a bow at a standoff, and she acts like she's surrendering, but she shoots the arrow like way up high and it ends up being a boomerang arrow that hits him in the back of the neck.
Yeah, and they mentioned that at the beginning. Yeah, he's like, why do you have a boomerang arrow? He's like, because it always comes back.
Yeah, in case I wanted the arrow to come back. She's like, why would you ever want that? But in this case, like, it ends up working out,
which is funny. There's there's an electro arrow. You said that one.
Yep.
Did you say rocket arrow?
Yeah, the rocket one.
Yeah, that one's good.
The suction tip arrow, I think, looks pretty good, actually.
The sonic arrow.
I missed that one.
He shot by them, but it didn't do anything. He just made like an kind of sound.
Some good lettering there.
Where's the suction arrow?
It's the one right before he gets knocked out. It
looks like a shower head.
It does look like a shower head, but I could see that being like industrial suction, you know?
Okay. Anyway, so...
So yeah, the issue ends with them at the airport dropping off Redhead. He still doesn't know what her name even is or what she did. But as he's trying to say goodbye, we come to mistake number one, which is them kissing. So
yep.
Really interesting way to just kind of flesh out the issue. So does Redhead come back? I assume she does, right?
I can't remember.
Okay. I can't imagine why that would be mistake number one.
I read like all these trades like very spaced out.
Really?
And so, and then I just finished, you know, not too long ago. So it's a little fuzzy.
Okay.
Which made like rereading this like enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. So that's the end of issue three. And then we go to issue number four, which we have the new artist, Javier Pulido. Sad that David and Fraction weren't on it the whole way, but I understand, you know, he's still really good, I think.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He reminds me a lot of like Jack Kirby art. If it was like more modern almost.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. Just kind of like with what faces are, they're like super wide and like the eyes don't always match up. I don't know if that's like,
they're kind of squinty looking.
Yeah. It just reminds me a lot of Jack Kirby. I think it's the same colorist too, Matt, on it, because I see a lot of the similarities.
Yeah.
So, so Clint and Kate are just chilling on like a rooftop bar, talking about whether Clint is like a real Avenger or not. Clint doesn't seem to think so, but then the helicarrier comes in out of nowhere and like S.H.I.E.L.D. comes and like swoops him up for a mission.
Kate also asked, have you ever killed anybody?
Yes.
And then he's like,
no.
Yeah.
Yep. That's an important part. Forgot about that.
Yep.
So the helicarrier comes in. He's up there. It's Maria Hill and Nick Fury there with Captain America. They explain that there is a tape of Operation Eucrita that is out and being optioned at an auction in Madripoor. We don't really know what's on this tape, but we know it's probably pretty bad. There's a little hint of it in the beginning of the issue.
Yeah, like the first page is
where
just
they
like...
see Clint shooting arrows into this dude's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So gives us a little hint about what it's about. But although we know is that it's bad, if it gets out, it'll be bad for S.H.I.E.L.D., it'll be bad for him, and just all this stuff. So if the tape gets out, the plan is that he's tasked to use their Amex Black to get the tape at the auction.
Right.
Do those exist?
Yeah. No spending limit.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You have to have, like, dynamite credit.
That, I'm sure. I'm sure it's only for, like, businesses and stuff, too, because, like, having literally no credit is insane.
Yeah. I mean... I think the purpose of it is to not actually, you know, buy anything with it.
Yeah. But it's for people that could, on a whim, buy something ridiculously expensive.
Like a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. I didn't know those existed. So Hawkeye gets to...
It is Amex specifically that has that. So
Really?
Yeah.
They call it Amex too, which is kind of cool.
I think, I'm sure like, you know, certain banks have like their own like black version of a credit card.
Where there's no limit.
Right.
Yeah. So once he, once Clint flies to Madripoor, he's like immediately pointed out and he ends up losing like his wallet with his cash and cards and Avengers ID, but he still has the Amex card in his passport. Safe. He didn't keep that in his wallet. And
before
then
he goes there, he goes to get his bow and stuff. And then Kate's like, what was that about? And then he's like, nothing. I can't tell you.
Basically,
I just want to mention that.
Yeah. That's also important.
What are you doing? You're missing the important stuff.
My bad. That's why you're here.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
So he acts as a cab driver for a little bit until he stumbles upon like the Madripoor Pearl, which is the hotel that the auction is taking place at.
Yeah.
There he gets captured again and tied up by Madame Mask, who I think is one of the villains in the beginning part of it. But Clint tells her about the tape and how it was Clint, who is an Avenger, committing an assassination on like the world's most wanted criminal terrorist. And whoever has the tape is going to make billions, is the idea. Mm-hmm. So Madame Mask has to find the Amex Black on him wherever he hides it. which it's presumed that it's in his pants somewhere.
He's in a secure area.
Yeah, which is, that's his butt cheeks. Or like, I don't know.
He's sitting down, though.
So I don't know how she gets it, but she reaches in there and is like feeling around, presumably. So
yeah, she's he doesn't have like a chastity belt on, so I don't think it'd be that impossible.
So then where do you think it is? Just like...
just tucked underneath his nuts or something?
Do you think it's like between like his left thigh and like his nuts?
That'd be safe place.
Probably.
Smelly place, but safe.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't matter how smelly it is, it'll still swipe. So yeah, he hides it there. And then he gets tied up to like a chair and put in a room. And then there's like some ninjas creeping in. So yeah, that's happening. Madame Mask ends up taking the shield card. The shield like Amex black card to the auction, where she bids against a bunch of big criminal names and orgs again. So she's going up against Fisk, the Magia again, spelled two G's. Remember when I mentioned that?
Nope.
You don't remember that? They can't use the actual word mafia.
Oh,
remember that?
I remember now.
Yeah. So the Magia, it's a real thing. I wasn't just bullshitting.
Ah.
Hydra's there, and then like the Mandarins, I guess. Who's that? Like,
I think I've seen the Crimson Cow before.
Crimson Cowl?
Cowl?
Okay. Cowl? Oh, okay. Maybe it's that.
Oh, wait, what were you talking about?
So it's like that there's like establishing shots of like the people that are there at the auction.
Uh-huh.
And you see Kingpin, you see like Hydra and stuff there.
Yeah.
I couldn't immediately recognize everybody, like who they were a part of, but that's who I think they were. And so the bids kind of were sitting around $350 million for this tape until Madame Mask throws in the $1 billion. And so she ends up winning, and she takes it back to her room where she requests men from the hotel to guard outside of the room and don't come in for any reason. And then we find out that Madame Mask is actually tied up in the room, and Kate Bishop is the one that has the tape now.
Ha-ha.
So she doesn't know what's in the tape at this point.
Being hella nosy.
Yeah, super nosy.
Little psycho, if you ask me.
And that's the end of the issue. Yeah, she's clingy as a as a
as
teammate.
A supporting character.
Yeah. She's like, I need to know what this tape is. So issue 5, this looks bad. Hawkeye's jumping out of the window where all the ninjas were creeping up on him.
Tied to a chair.
And he's tied to a chair. He ends up like getting his hands free with one of the swords that the ninja's using or whatever.
That was a little convenient.
Yeah.
No, his feet got free, but his hands were still tied in.
Does he lose his shoe in this sequence that you see?
I'd have to look for it again.
Yeah. It comes up a little bit later, but...
I think it's when... we'll get to it.
We'll get to it. But
so Kate watches the tape.
Kate ends up watching the tape, which sees him, Clint Barton, shooting this terrorist and killing him, which he just said that he wasn't doing.
Right, because he said that he'd never killed anybody. And then, like, the news said it was, like, Navy SEALs.
Yep.
And so the gist of it and the problem is, like, if this is put out there, then, you know, the U.S. government's lying, the Avengers are lying.
Oh, that's
and then one of the Avengers is like a killer.
Right.
And so that's like what the issue was.
Mm-hmm. While Clint is falling out of the building, Mariah Hill like swoops up and picks him in this like floating bike thing. I don't know. Some shield tech. Just got to go with it.
Madam Mask is like in the closet and like, you know, knocks something over. And then like the guards come in and figure out that
it's actually
Kate's there.
Mm-hmm. So Clint jumps in to kind of save her with one of those like explosive arrows that end up breaking the glass, which there's a really cool sequence there where you see like part of the lettering. It's just the glass shattering looks really cool. And so they're fighting all these guys. Clint jumps in on the broken glass.
I found the shoe part.
Oh, is it on there?
So yeah, when he falls on the thing, it's got this ramp for catching people specifically. And one of the ninjas like jumps for him and holds onto his leg. And then like Clint's like, I should let him like fall, but he's like, grab my hand, and then he's like, never, and then takes his shoe with him.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes more sense. Okay. So he's got one shoe on, he jumps in the window that's now broken and lands on the glass, and he's like, oh fuck, because like the glass like
glass shoes.
He's like, shit. And so they end up fighting them a bunch.
They run down the hall.
They forget the tapes, so they got to go back
fight the people that are chasing them.
So they go get the tape when the real Madam Mask is there and ends up shooting Clint as they're trying to escape, but destroys the tape in the process, which is the only copy of this thing, presumably. So
right.
That gets destroyed in the process.
It's like a VCR tape.
Yeah.
Or a VHS.
Yep. So
that goes into VCR.
I also like that page where he gets shot because Madam Mask is like shooting them, but Clint is trying to say Kate in that process, but Kate is split up like K in one bubble, A in one bubble, like T, to show like how fast everything's moving, basically.
And how fast like he pushes her out of the way,
basically,
to take the bullet.
Mm-hmm. And then the shot is all red and stuff. I always love that shit.
It's awesome.
When it's like just a deep, heavy red.
Then they go in the elevator. They had the tape, but it's broken. And then like he had a, you know,
a vest on.
Vest on, so of course.
And so it turns out that the tape is actually a fake among three total fake tapes, and they're used to like find moles that are within S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, so they had like a Captain America tape, they had a Wolverine tape.
Yep, and whichever one leaks, they know relatively who's the mole based off who had access to it.
Because Navy SEALs were actually the ones who killed like that most wanted guy.
So then like is the tape just fake?
Yeah, it's fake tape.
But how do they like kill a dude with two arrows? And I guess it's, do they explain like what it actually is on the tape?
It's like, yeah, he says that. Nick Fury says it.
My phone's about to die or else I'd be looking too.
Gotta do everything myself.
Yep. You do all the heavy lifting.
He just said we produce 3D cord tapes.
So I guess special effects. I don't know. They got a lot of money. They could just make it.
Yeah, so I'm sure Wolverine like stabs him in the face and Captain America just throws a shield at his face.
Cracks his neck or something.
Yeah, and so I loved that, like that whole twist. Like the tape was to find this thing that's like,
I think it's clever.
Fake. Yeah, no, super clever.
Yeah, to find a mole in S.H.I.E.L.D. Like that's a clever way to, you know, do that. So
yeah, the reason they did that is just, I guess, Nick's trying to reinforce S.H.I.E.L.D.
And change it.
And whatnot. Yeah.
So yeah, and that's the end of that run. Then there's a shitty issue from Young Avengers 5 that has just a random...
Presents Hawkeye, like...
it's like Kate Bishop story. I didn't even take any notes on it because I just wasn't really interested. It's like, it feels so random to put in this trade.
I didn't reread it.
I read through it and it's basically just Kate on her team. It's not even like in continuity because like Hawkeye's still Ronin at this point.
I guess maybe it was around the time when Kate Bishop became a thing.
I don't know,
because she probably doesn't have like her own like trade, you know,
until
her standalone
which came out series. Recently,
right? Exactly. So I guess it's just
more on her, I guess, try and get people to buy Young Avengers since Kate's in there or whatever. But yeah,
maybe
I don't know, like
hey, this is good, you liked Kate, she's in more stuff.
Kate's cool, huh? Only when Fraction writes her.
Yeah.
Anyway, back matter matters. There's not a whole lot of back matter. We get a variant
by Adi Granov. It's very, he looks like Eminem here.
He does look like
it's Eminem. A very like
He did a bunch of work at this time.
It's a really well shaded, like, you know, photorealistic version of Hawkeye and of kind of the same uniform he had in this book.
Yeah. A little bit more armory with like pouches and stuff.
And then there's a bunch of David Ajay like character designs, just trying to figure out like that Casual Friday Hawkeye.
There's a couple in there that I'm like, I would be okay with this.
There's one where he's got like a cowl. There's one where he's got like long sleeves.
Short I like
sleeves.
The beanie one that has an H.
Yeah, he's got like a beanie.
That one's a little on the nose, but
that comes back. He like, oh, really? He just wears a beanie. Yeah. He's got an H on it.
And they're trying to figure out what he's like. Isn't there a couple in there where he's trying to figure out like what his suit should actually be when he's all like armored up? Yeah, there's. I see it.
Yeah, there's like some where they're figuring out what kind of gloves he wears, you know. It's just like a page of all these little doodles.
And then they end up just going with purple shirt or just black shirt with arrow.
Right.
But it's cool to see that. Like, I'm sure that they
go, I love this. I'm this sure is like my favorite thing to be in like back matter. It's just like character designs.
It could be in every back matter and I'd be all about it. Just yeah. Just see like where they start and then where they end up is.
And where like it could have gone.
Yeah.
Because like these all look really cool, but I think but the way
it wouldn't have worked as well in like the tone of this story. Uh-huh. If he's all armored up. Because he kind of like blends in with like normal people.
Right. Just wearing like his Hawkeye shirt.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, definitely.
So good stuff.
I agree. Do you want to talk about the. So I mentioned last week the dog issue, like the standalone issue. I thought that was in the first trade, but it's actually in the second trade.
Yeah, I did read it. It's issue 11.
Actually, yeah, and so I have the second trade too.
Yep. Yeah, I read it. I didn't take any notes on it, but it's great. It's kind of like a silent issue, and it's going to be... It's hard to, like, explain entirely.
I can explain it.
But
I won't say exactly what happens.
What's the general idea, though?
So, it's just... He can hear... you know, people talking and stuff like that, and there's a couple panels of that, but it's kind of scribbled out because it doesn't really matter. It's more about like what he's thinking and what he hears, like
his perspective. It's the whole issue is the dog just kind of
walking around like the apartment building.
Yeah.
And he
doing
like,
different things.
Yeah, he like discovers like a murder, and then like based off of the smell he could figure out like where the murderer went and like who got murdered based off of like who wasn't in their rooms, because he could smell. So like basically he's based off of his senses, there's these like little like web diagrams.
They look like people. Almost like zing signs almost.
Okay, I don't know what that is, but sure,
it's like the zing like sign, like watch out for deer, you know, on, okay, like the road.
Yeah,
it almost like looks that. Like that.
And but, so it's just this web of like things that he smells, like he smells like coffee off of Clint and like pizza off of Katie.
And then he like these like web diagrams, it also like explains like his emotions towards those people, like when he's like in that diagram that like he smells Kate, there's like a little heart because like he likes Kate. Just stuff like that. And when he smells something that smells like Clint, there's like a little simple picture of Clint, like Clint's face. So he meets like another dog in this situation as well.
Yeah, it's like a smaller dog.
I really like the writing that's scribbled out, because a lot of it, the only like words that you see are words that a dog would know. Like there's down or like sit or things that like pop up.
Oh, I didn't even notice
that. That's what that is. And
that's
so
smart as fuck.
When he says Clint, like I think the dog knows Clint's name, you know?
Okay.
So it's things like that. Like the rest of the conversation is scribbled out, so you don't really know what Clint and Kate are saying to each other, but the parts of the sentence that are commands they see.
Yeah.
So yeah, he discovers like a murder and stuff.
Then he walks down and he's like by the trash and eats some pizza out of a pizza box.
His name's Lucky. I don't know if we said that now.
Yeah, they call him Pizza Dog sometimes.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome.
That's a great name. I think Lucky's a great name for a dog too.
Lucky's pretty good. It's kind of like basic in my opinion.
I like it.
So there's like one where it's like a panel of his ear. Uh-huh. And you can hear like a van like going away, and then he runs into like the Russians that are beating up some dude, and he like barks and they're like Arrow. You know, like recognizing him, because it's like just the Russians.
It's the dog. Yeah.
And then he like sees their faces and then remembers that they like kicked him.
Yeah.
You know? And so just kind of showing how he works.
There's no words. It's all kind of just told through pictures and like random, like almost clip art looking things.
Yeah. This is, I think this issue by itself was an Eisner Award winner.
It should be.
Because it's awesome.
It's very abstract and like you can kind of tell like the general idea of what the dog's thinking, but he might be thinking like different things in what you are interpreting it.
Yeah, they kind of have to like show you what he's thinking,
right? and just super creative overall. Like, I can't even imagine what would go into making something like this.
I would love to see just like the, you know, the writer's notes on like how
this is there issue a back matter on this one that's pretty extensive. Because I know in this second issue, it's kind of split up. I think Javier Pulido is on this one, right? And then Francis Francavilla.
As far as the colors, yeah, but the...
Oh, wait, who did the colors?
Wait, what are you talking about?
Who are the two, like, artists, like pencils, inks?
Like, David Ajay, and then on issue number 7, it's Steve Lieber and Jesse Hamm.
Oh, Steve Lieber.
Yeah, that.
That's cool.
That is spelled like Bieber with an L.
But wait, isn't Francisco Francavilla or whatever on here?
Yep, I see his name somewhere. Ah, shit, I lost my page.
Because I'm pretty sure he does one of these.
Oh, he does number 10. Sorry.
Okay, cool.
Art and color.
Yeah, he's a great artist.
He must have helped on number 10 because shows that Jay was on 10 too.
Interesting. Anyway.
But yeah, like I think you can pick this one issue up and just kind of read it, and it takes like a minute to read.
I mean, I was looking at everything because I just wanted to understand the bigger picture, which you can do as well.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But if you...
And it ties into like the second trade and like the first trade.
And it's just all about dogs. So you should really just pick it up because...
Yeah. If you like dogs, you're going to love this shit.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
So really good shit. I hope it did win an Eisner because I think it definitely earns it.
Yeah.
And there's like random like other mini stories in there that are, they're like kind of jumping.
Yeah. Like he just like walks into.
Yeah.
But like it doesn't really like explain anything. It's just kind of the dog's point of view.
I love Lucky.
Oh, so good.
Anyway. So yeah, good stuff.
We did back matter already.
Yep.
My ass hurts.
So now we're going to the poll list.
Oh yeah. What'd I got two books. This week, I got Adventure Man number 2. I haven't read number 1, but I just like Mac Fraction. Adventure Man.
Oh, I didn't know he was coming out with a book.
That's his Image series, maybe?
Good?
I don't know. I haven't read it.
Oh, okay.
But I got it. And then we got the new issue of Money Shot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I haven't been to the shop this week,
oh, unfortunately. Man. What would you get, though?
I'd probably get Money Shot, and I think... Actually, I don't even know what's coming out, to be honest.
I think like Green Lantern, maybe.
Green Lantern did come out.
Batman,
I don't think so.
You don't think you're getting it?
No, I'll probably get it because this is the one that finally like Jorge Jimenez is going to be on.
Oh, yeah. Dude, his Harley Quinn art
unbelievable.
Is stupid cool.
It's not even like...
I don't even like Harley Quinn. I don't either. But he just draws it awesome.
And there's like so much like energy and she's not like over-sexualized or anything.
Yeah, and just like... I really like the outfits.
Yeah, I know. He did like design so many good outfits for characters. It's yeah, unreal.
He's awesome at that. And just like using that 2-color palette like really well to design that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And clothes are a bitch to draw.
Absolutely.
Like t-shirts, like wrinkles and shit.
And he just, like goes crazy. Great. Like he'll just do like leather jackets and you know that they're leather, or like he'll rip up some of the shorts.
Yeah.
And stuff. It's,
it looks so good.
He's the perfect man. And he's buff.
Yeah. He's beautiful.
The most gorgeous man.
He speaks Spanish?
Yeah. He barely speaks any English.
He makes me hate myself.
He just draws probably for 8-9 hours a day.
Well, he's
got to
speak English for like...
He does. He does know a little bit. It's his second language.
To draw panels though?
Huh?
He's got to be able to know it pretty well to like draw panels.
He does. Like he's like talked on Twitter talking about some issues.
Does he have like a...
He's like hello. Accent? He's like hello friends or whatever.
Ah.
Just kind of that.
But, he's got an accent too?
Yeah, perfect. He does. He's great.
Does he live in Mexico?
No. I think he lives in California.
Oh, cool.
Just based off Instagram pics, I think. Okay. But anyway. What else did you read? Did you read anything else? Did you watch anything?
Oh, yeah. Dude. While we were at the cabin, I read a book by Jason.
Jason?
Just Jason. That's like his name. That's like his like his like...
Wow.
Name. Sorry, hold on. You're going to have to edit this out because I really want to explain it.
That's fine.
So, Jason, comic...
Red. Don't you have it on your Comixology?
I think I got rid of it.
Okay.
So, yeah, Jason, that's like his name. He's like a Norwegian cartoonist. And so, I've been reading most of his stuff. What the fuck? Oh, and the book's called Why Are You Doing This?
Okay.
And so what's cool about this is it's mostly silent. You can just kind of scroll through his books right there. It's mostly silent, but there's a lot of stuff, a lot of dialogue that like helps move the story forward.
Yeah.
It's all kind of depressing, but then again, some of them are like really clever and really cool.
I've seen his stuff around. Like I've seen I Killed Adolf Hitler.
That one's awesome. That's like the best time travel comic I've ever read.
We should read one of these.
Yeah, no. And the thing that's I like about these is that they're like 50 pages.
Oh.
Like I read that one like with like a cup of coffee. And like by the time I was done with the coffee, I was done with the book.
So if we're ever on a crunch episode.
Yeah. Or we can do like three in like an episode. You know what I mean?
Probably.
Like I could like pick out like my three favorites.
Let's do that. Yeah. That sounds great.
Like I Killed Adolf Hitler is really good. The Left Bank Gang is really good. And sweet. I think that.
So he writes and draws it, I assume?
Yeah. I think he does.
Probably self publishes too.
No, it's through. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's like independent. He's got like a bunch of Harvey Awards, several Eisners.
Sweet. Good for him.
What that the fuck awesome. Publisher? It's like, Oni? Fantagraphics.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So super like indie kind of like hell comic yeah. books.
I'm down for that.
It's kind of hard to find like writers like that, that you like that are on such these small like publishers, but his stuff, it's like so weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like am super into it. Like all the people are like animals basically. It's not like a Zootopia kind of vibe. They're all like the same size. And they kind of look like people,
mm-hmm.
but, and it's like this simplistic style. It's really cool. That's the only thing I've read, but what about you?
While we were on the planes, I read a bunch of stuff. I read,
you were knocking them down.
I was a bunch of single issue stuff. The big ones, I read issue 3 of Daniel Warren Johnson's Wonder Woman book. I thought that would have been the end, but it ended up not being the end. So
still going.
I think it goes to 5. I want to say. It's really good. The general idea is that Wonder Woman is in like this apocalypse state of like the Earth, and she doesn't remember how it got there. And she's like kind of knocked out. There's not a whole lot of people around, but she like finds these kids that are part of this group that have survived somehow. And she's trying to figure out what happened, basically. And there's a bunch of like apocalypse monsters that Dana Warren Johnson's just super good at drawing. Bunch of really good lettering and stuff. And
did he do the Murder Falcon?
Yes.
Art?
Yep.
Oh, no
art
way.
And writing.
That's awesome.
He also did like Extremity. I don't know if you've seen that around.
I've seen it because I remember seeing you read that, the Wonder Woman, and like thinking like that's really like cartoony kind of like art.
It's really like exaggerated and like exaggerated and like brutal, I guess. He's really good. He's like one of my favorites for sure. And just super nice. Like I remember hearing him on a podcast once and just totally sweet, total sweetheart. And he plays guitar.
Yeah, that's sick. Because he wrote music for Murder Falcon.
Yeah, my favorite. Yeah, Murder Falcon's like, was a really special experience for me.
I think he's one of the way better like new talents in like the absolutely. Industry for
he's,
sure.
He's definitely going to do something huge after Wonder Woman, I think.
I think Wonder Woman's still kind of big, but I think something like maybe even ongoing. I don't know if it's
the
like,
fact that they gave him a book about Wonder Woman in the apocalypse doing all this like crazy shit.
So it's not in it's, continuity and it's standalone?
It's a black label book.
Oh, okay.
So it can have like there's some pretty gory scenes.
Okay.
In general. Sick. So I read that. I read the Jeff Lemire Sorrentino Batman, it's not Killer Smile, The Killed Smile or something like that. It's a follow-up to their Joker black label book.
Do you have to read Joker to read that?
It helps.
Okay.
And the Joker one's still phenomenal. The Joker one's like a psychological trip, and then this Batman one is too.
Okay.
And they tie in together just barely, but I think you could still read it by itself. I just think I would probably recommend going through the Joker one because it's only 3 issues,
right?
I
don't remember if we talked about it in the pod or in person, but yeah. Like that's like his first Batman thing, right?
Who?
Jeff Lemire.
I think so. Yeah, I think we were looking at it and we were trying to find something
because he's done a bunch of, you know, Marvel stuff and then the like Green Arrow for DC and then like a Teen Titans book, but
and like Animal Man and stuff. So he's done like stuff that's right. around there. He's done Swamp Thing, I'm pretty sure too. Maybe. Like right after Charles Soule, I want to say.
Okay.
Anyway, really good stuff. And then I also read the first issue of the new DC event book. It's Death Metal. DC Death Metal.
Didn't we do that already?
You just did Metal.
Ah.
Now it's Death Metal.
Oh.
The idea.
It's fucking hardcore.
Is it's like the most crazy comic book. I can't even like explain it well.
Was it Greg Capullo?
Greg Capullo on art. Okay. And his stuff is just total eye candy. He makes everything look badass.
Metal.
Like, Scott, like, has some pretty metal things that he puts in the actual, like, writing, which is pretty cool. But I think I brought that up for a reason. Oh, it ties into Dr. Manhattan stuff.
Oh.
So I think in that front, it's interesting to read. And, yeah, just good stuff. And then I read, I caught up on Family Tree.
I haven't read the last issue, but...
Number 6, I believe. Yeah. That's a...
Maybe I'm super behind. I don't know. I thought it was 3.
You only read the first 2 issues?
I think so.
Oh, it's on 6 right now.
Oh, damn. All right, I got something to do.
That's a good book.
Yeah. It's.
I want to see Phil Hester on other stuff.
I thought it was... artist. Yeah. I can't picture his art right now, but the book's definitely not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be one of his like more like depressing, like actual family, like books, like slice of life stuff. But then it's just like, oh, this guy's a tree.
No, it kind of goes into that.
But there's like the supernatural element of it.
There's a supernatural element to it. But so he kind of uses that to address like fatherly abandonment.
Okay.
So there's like some pretty heavy themes in there that I think he just uses the supernatural aspect to kind of comment on.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's the man.
Yeah.
He's the best.
He can really do most things.
I think so.
Because I've read like a lot of his slice of life stuff. And
that's like, really interesting.
Yeah. It
Underwater Welder is phenomenal.
Yeah, that was awesome. Like I read Essex County. And
I haven't read that yet.
I didn't think I would like it. And I'm just like, just read it. They say it's good. And so I read it. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, oh. And then, like, you know, and it's like that depressing kind of stuff. But just, like, the way it's told is awesome. And
yeah.
Not what you expect.
That's, like, one of his first books, too.
Yeah. I guess he's from Essex County. So it's, like.
Yeah. He's a Canadian writer.
Yeah.
So, super good stuff.
Super good.
Yeah. I think that's everything for me.
That's the pod. Are we doing Bitch Planet next week?
Yep. Bitch Planet. Per recommendation from Chip Zdarsky,
yeah, you know,
friend of the pod,
on the one or two episodes that we had him on, pretty cool. Yep.
Big flex.
No big deal. Okay, go follow us on stuff. Trade Waiters Pod at Gmail. Send us your recommendations.
More like Nate Thick on Twitter at Trade Waiters Pod on Twitter.
Trade Waiters, yeah, you said Trade Waiters Pod on Twitter. Cool.
All right.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks, y'all.
I hope you have a great day.
We love you.
Bye.